Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal. I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Cafe Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I feel great.
You know, I thought you were going to burst out into "I feel pretty." I don't know why, but I just—you
know what? You never have to worry about that. You never have to worry about that.
Come
certainly on.
On
the radio.
There was
in the shower. That's your only shot.
There was that one time.
And don't get anywhere near me when I'm in the shower.
I want to talk about blood.
You do.
I do want to talk about blood. It's not even Halloween, but I want to talk about blood.
Okay, I'm ready to talk about blood.
Great article in the Washington Post where they're talking about blood. And here's a dialogue. Ready? Right? Next, the supermarket butcher looks up and down the meat case. I need a quart of pig's blood, you say. Pardon? He says, pretending he hoped he didn't hear you correctly. Pig's blood. I need a quart. What you gonna do with that? Pig's blood. It's hard to find these days. Blood of any kind is hard to find these days. It's actually, it's not as easy to harvest as you might think. By the way, have we grossed anybody out? I guess
you grossed me out, and we just started.
Turned off the
radio. Good morning.
Already.
Good morning.
My grandmother used to say that drinking, you know, in Victorian times when butchers were located in cities and in town centers, women, like, you know, society women, would often go and drink a glass of blood. I know, it's kind of gross.
Sorry.
Those Victorians.
Which is funny because I like my meat rare and blood red and... But the thought of drinking blood by itself, I mean, as a kid, you know, my grandparents would make blood sausage or something like that. I hated it.
Well, that's the point of this article here. I mean, coming from a time when you wouldn't waste any part of the animal, when frankly it would be considered disrespectful and wasteful to waste any part of the animal that you killed, blood was an ingredient in a lot of things and was used in a lot of different ways. But I do remember that my maternal grandmother used to say that, you know, if you drank blood, it was good for especially women. Mm-hmm. You know, they thought that it gave you all kinds of stuff that you were
iron.
Missing. Yeah, iron. Exactly. And, you know, when you harvest blood from an animal, it's not just, you know, picking up what's slopped around the slaughterhouse. I know it's kind of gross.
I got the willies. We're 2 minutes into the show. You're giving me chills. And
we're going to talk about wine in the next segment. I promise it'll get nicer. Well, the thing is, in a lot of different cultures, and you're seeing show up on restaurant menus now, more and more products that use blood, and they're not afraid of talking about it.
Not on ours.
No, not on ours.
Go ahead.
But different ethnicities use it in different ways. I mean, sausage is the blood sausage. Chorizo, it was traditionally a blood sausage. Sorry, I know a lot of people are like, it is? I'm never ordering that again. Right? Chorizo is a blood sausage. Bratwurst is a blood sausage. You Italians have some blood sausage, as
yeah,
I understand.
I told you, I never dug this blood sausage.
Sanguinaccio, is that what that's called? Sanguinaccio, something like that. We should call Anthony Gillian and ask him for the Italian pronunciation of that. But the idea of using, and the Irish also have a blood, we have black pudding.
Yeah, also disgusting.
No, for breakfast, are you kidding
come
me?
Come on.
If it's done well, it's really good.
Well, then I guess I've never had it done well. That's what I'm going to presume.
Well, let's go over just so you don't order this.
Irish people were cooking it for me.
It's one of the only things we do well. Just so you don't order this by accident, when you're seeing stuff out there so you know what it is, I told you about the bratwurst. Boudin noir is, of course, the French blood sausage. You know, even disgusting things sound great in French, don't they? Le boudin noir. Ah, oui, oui. What's that? Blood sausage? Put it down.
I told you the story once before of the boucher à la reine.
Mouthful fit for a queen?
It's a queen's
mouthful.
Something my father gave me once when I was a little kid, and I was at my grandmother's house, and she made us boucher à la reine, and it looked like this great, it was in this little puff pastry, and it looked like coquille Saint-Jacques. It was a little cream sauce with mushrooms, and it looked so delightful, and I took a bite of it, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is so horrible. And my father's like, well, you know, you took it, you got to finish it. Because that was the rule in my house. You had anything that was on your plate had to be finished. So I I'm 10 years old.
Muscling through this stuff.
Through this, and I'm like, Bouchay a la reine, it sounded so nice, but I can't stand this. What is it, Dad? I'm not telling you. What do you mean? It means a mouthful for a queen. That's all you need to know. And I finally get to the end, and he's like, okay, Dad, I'm done with it now. What was it? Oh, that was calf's brain. You never would have eaten it if I told you what it was. It's like, I'm still angry at you for this, Father. If you're out there listening, I'm mad.
I had a similar experience with. I was at probably my favorite restaurant in the world, in France, Pierre Gagnaire, and I was there with our sommelier, a guy named John Kafarski. We had gone on a wine buying trip, and we stopped in Paris to eat, which is a good thing to do if you're going through Paris.
Let's see, I'm in Milan. Where am I going to go? Paris. I'm hungry.
And Pierre Gagnaire. Is this amazing Basque chef, and he has a 3-star Michelin restaurant, and he was sending us a tasting menu. Knew we were in the business. They couldn't have been nicer to us, and we got this tasting of veal, right? Mm-hmm. And it was a veal head, right, which was whole, all the different kinds. And both John and I had this little thing on a cracker. It looked like schmutz on a cracker, right? And we're and everything we love. I mean, I'm talking 10 courses of amazingness, right? Mm-hmm. So at the same time, we both put this little cracker in our mouth. And I should have known when I picked up the little cracker and it weighed 4 pounds that something gross was going to go in my mouth. And I think that was the brains. I think it was veal brains, like all reduced down into a paste.
Oh, thank you.
And we looked at each other like, oh, my God, we have to eat it. We can't spit anything out of Pierre Gagnaire. And, like, Pierre was in the room. You know what I mean?
Oh, you
couldn't even do the
can.
Napkin trick.
You know,
and I'm sitting and I got like a $40 napkin on my lap. You know, I can't spit it in the napkin. That was tough. That was tough muscling through that.
While we're talking about gross foods,
yeah,
I remember the first time.
It wasn't gross. I'll say it was over my head.
Well, while we're talking about gross over my head foods, I remember you and I went together to Alan Harding's restaurant in Brooklyn.
Patois
was exactly the name of the restaurant. When he first opened up, and one of the things Alan Harding was looking to do when he opened this
chef owner,
was create a real neighborhood kind of place that people could afford to go to,
mm-hmm.
and you could afford to go there once a week or twice a week. Well, one of the ideas of his restaurant was, you know, in Catherine Lombardi, we use a lot of the secondary and tertiary cuts of meat
to make into sausages, and
that's what my grandmother would have done. Well, Alan took that kind of one step farther than the tertiary cuts of meat.
I don't know
if you remember, he did the skewer, and he sent us a skewer of organ meats, okay? And on that skewer, there was a heart of chicken, and there were all these things that you begged your grandmother to throw away. Okay, you just...
We're rich now, Grandma. We live in America. We don't need to eat that anymore.
I don't need to eat the heart anymore. And I got to tell you, that was one of those things that I was like, okay, I'm a restaurant owner. I need to try this. I got to try it. I hated it. Every bite of it I can't stand.
That was I know Alan, and I love Alan, and his restaurants are amazing.
And his restaurant's great. I don't want to say anything.
All of his restaurants are great, and as a businessman, he's great. Mm-hmm. But that was a gauntlet that he threw down for you.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what this is? You muscled through that, and you've been waiting for 8 or 12 years to pay him back to criticize him on the radio for it. So, Alan, we love you. There it is. Payback's a... Well, you know what payback is. We don't want to say it on family radio. All right, when we come back, we're going to be talking with Leslie Sprocco about her book, The Simple and Savvy Wine Guide, Buying, Pairing, and Sharing for All. It's just coming out. You can find out about it on our website, and we're going to talk with her about it in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Leslie Sprocco is the award-winning author of Wine for Women and a regular wine columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. Her works appeared in publications like O, the Oprah Magazine, Family Circle, Red Book, and Working Mother. She's host of the Emmy-nominated show Check Please on PBS and appears regularly on national radio and television. Her new book is The Simple and Savvy Wine Guide, Buying and Pairing and Sharing for All, with more than 1,000 wines to choose from.
Leslie, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mark. Hello, Francis. How are you?
We're doing really well today.
We're great. This is quite a book you have coming out just about now. It is a guide where you actually list specific wines that people should look for, specific wineries that people should look for. And what's most interesting about it is the way in which you've broken it up. Can you talk to us about that?
Absolutely. You know, it's when I decided I was going to write a wine guide for my second book, I thought, oh, there's so many of them out on the marketplace. That most of them outline the wines by, you know, here's your $20 Chardonnays, or here's your regional look at wines, you know, all your Alsatian Gewurztraminers or Italian, you know, Chiantis, things like that. But what that didn't do for me was answer the questions that people regularly ask, which is, you know, hey, Leslie, I'm having pizza tonight. What kind, instead of beer, what kind of wine do you recommend? Or I've got to go to my boss's house, you know, and I've got to bring an impressive bottle of wine. What do you suggest? Or, you know, I really want to try something new and hot. What is it? And I really wanted in this book to answer those questions. And so you'll see from the organization of the wines, it's a little bit different. I do wines by mood, where I have bathtub wines and sexy sippers and, you know, and a Venice trip around the world, all the way to pizza and snack food wines and things like 25 wines to try before you die. So.
Didn't I see the bathtub wines on the I Love Lucy show way back when? Wasn't that a bathtub wine?
No, they aren't made in the bathtub, Mark.
No, these are ones that are made in the bathtub or ones that you pour into the tub.
Right, I see.
These you just sip while you're sitting in the tub.
Well, let's talk about wines by mood, and I think it's very interesting because you make what's interesting about the book is you make these generalizations and you talk about how to select wines by mood, but then you list you have tables full of wines that people can you give specific examples that people can look for, but how does one choose a wine by mood?
Well, you know, but that's really what we do. You do choose wines by mood. Oh, I feel like, you know, having something light and fresh. You know, I'm hanging out with my girlfriends. I need, kind of wine.
Just to interrupt for a second, why am I always in a different mood depending on if somebody else is paying or if I'm paying? My mood can
change.
You're
always in a much better mood when somebody else is
paying. My mood changed. I was like, I'll have the Beaujolais. No, I'll have the first growth Bordeaux. You know, it changed. I'm sorry, I was a little joke in there.
See, you choose wines by mood.
Yeah, it's true.
Absolutely.
Because if I were paying, it would depress me. But if you're paying, it thrills me.
What if my mood changes between the liquor store and
home? Actually, you know what? Francis, I should have a list in there. Wines to choose when somebody else is footing the bill.
Yeah. I got that one memorized.
That should be my next book.
I got that in my head. So
I'll co-author it with you.
Talk to us about wines by mood, though.
Well, these are really, you know, I break them down into subcategories. So festive wines, you know, where I talk about wedding wines, and that's a question I get asked all the time. I'm having a wedding, or, you know, my daughter's having a wedding, and we need to buy the wines. What do you suggest? You know, we're having a chicken dish, we're having blah, blah, blah. So wines by mood is really about those things that you're doing, things that you're feeling. And as you mentioned, what I do is I sort of give the situation picnic wines. Let's, for example, you know, you've got a block party or you're heading out on a picnic, and guess what? You can bring wines that are now all these chic, hip wines that are in boxes and tin cans and, you know, great screw cap wines. And it gives me an opportunity to talk about the beauty of that. As I always tell people, it's hip to be screwed these days.
I always thought that I would create a whole category of wines, the wines that I call mother-in-law wines. And those are wines that I'm willing to open when my mother-in-law's over and still willing to drink.
See, there you go.
You know what's really funny about that?
Wines by mood, by situation.
Can I tell you what's really funny about something that just happened? Mark forgets that we broadcast this on the radio, and his mother-in-law is in the listening area. So I suggest that you have somebody call her and get her to do something besides listen to the radio.
We'll
be
fine.
Mom, all those special bottles.
Right, exactly.
Exactly. Expensive ones.
I told you they had to be nice. They still had to be nice enough for me to drink. So, you know.
Well, I mean, so what I think is very interesting is usually you have books, and they'll give you, you know, wines with food. And that's a pairing that you see a lot. But wines by mood, I think, is a great and valid choice. I, for example, when Mark and I go to a restaurant, we always recommend, we teach a lot of consumer wine classes, and we say, pick your dinner, and then pick the food based on dinner. And we train all our sommeliers on our floor to, when someone asks for a wine recommendation, ask them what they're having for dinner, and then recommend a wine to go with it. I don't do that. When we go out to a restaurant, Mark and I look at the wine list, we pick the wine,
right,
and then we decide what we're going to eat.
Exactly. We follow.
Exactly.
The
what
food follows
like?
The wine. Right.
And you know, I do a whole other section of wines by season, because you really do find that people say, oh, you know what, it's winter. I really want something kind of hearty and full. I want to sit by the fire, or, you know, or it's summertime and they want a, you know, something refreshing and light, a Sauvignon Blanc, a dry rosé. really, we dress by the seasons, we eat by the seasons. Why not drink by the seasons?
Yeah, you know, Hearth Restaurant in New York City does exactly that. They have a section of their wine list called seasonal wines that where you can go and actually pick wines according to the season as opposed to what you might be eating that night.
Yeah, we're going to link that up on our site to go to Hearth Restaurant. Paul Greco is the owner and sommelier. They're one of the owners and a sommelier there. And they have a seasonal wine section. And at the end of the season, they sell off. They have a sale on their
end of the season sale. It's kind of
cool.
Amusing.
And we're
that's
also
great.
And we're also
and again, that's how we think about it. And I want wine to be something that's fun, that's approachable, that people don't get intimidated by. And I think we're moving that way in this country. You know, between all the critter labels that you've got and all the whimsical wines. And
I think we are, Leslie. And I think your book is helping. The book is The Simple and Savvy Wine Guide: Buying and Pairing and Sharing for All. We'll be talking more with Leslie Sprocco in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room, and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. Our guest today is Leslie Sprocco. Her book is The Simple and Savvy Wine Guide. And, Leslie, we were talking about pairing wines or categorizing wines in this exhaustive book a little differently. You have a category here that you call insider wines. What are insider wines?
Well, they're those wines that, you know, make people feel like they really know what they're talking about. Very, you know, savvy. And the guide is called The Simple and Savvy Wine Guide, and I want people to know that it's very simple to feel savvy about wine. And so I have all those sections, and insider wine is one of those. And I do a list that I love called Overlooked Surprises.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I had a woman timidly raise her hand in a wine class I was doing and said, I love Riesling. And I said, you know what? You are so smart.
Yeah.
You are the smartest woman. So I talk about Rieslings in that list. I talk about rosés, dry rosés. I talk about sherries. Wines that people might be afraid of, you know, trying or admitting that they love, I love.
And wines that often represent a great price-value relationship.
Oh, fantastic.
You know, we teach a number of consumer classes for which we're well paid, but I teach every year a course at Rutgers. I guess there's a woman who teaches a class at Rutgers, and she asks me to come in and teach one of the sections. And I always pick Riesling, German and Austrian wines in general. And it's funny because they don't have the same sex appeal as, you know, Cabernet or Burgundy or Bordeaux, but they're just amazing, you know. And you can get older ones and you can age them yourself. But so insider wines.
Insider wines. I mean, again, I want to introduce people to things they might not try. One of the questions I get asked again all the time is, what are the best wines you've ever had? Which is so hard to answer. Mm-hmm. It's like, what's your favorite wine? I don't know. Who's my favorite kid? I'm not.
Right.
It depends on what I'm doing. My favorite wine is usually my last wine that I drank. But so I do a gathering of the greats list, which are some of the most amazing bottles I've had. And then I do 25 to try before you die. Wines that might not necessarily be super expensive or super hard to find, but you just have to try them. They're amazing. I also do an insider wine, secret weapon wines, for those people that really don't like wine. But I build a case of wines that will get even, you know, beer drinkers loving wine.
You know, you mentioned a category of wine that we hardly ever talk about and is very, very intimidating. And I would love to maybe after the news talk to you just a little bit about sherry. Mm-hmm. and how it is such an easy category to make a foray into, and people can get a chance to try something that might be really special.
All right, after the news, we'll be talking about sherry with Leslie Bracco, author of The Simple and Savvy Wine Guide. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Our guest today is Leslie Spracco. She's the award-winning author of Wine for Women and the Simple and Savvy Wine Guide, Buying and Pairing and Sharing for All.
You know, Leslie, right before the break, we talked just for a brief moment about sherry. And I do think that that's, while there are a lot of different kinds of sherries and they can be a little bit intimidating, that that can be a way for people to make a foray to maybe a new world that they've never tried before.
Absolutely. You know, we do still have this connotation of it being old Aunt Ida sipping a little glass of cream sherry, you know, Harvey's Bristol cream sherry. And people sort of swear off it. And I don't even know if they think or know that it's wine,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it's just a fortified style of wine that is absolutely one of the most flexible food wines you're going to find. And you can find it in very, very dry styles, like a Fino. If you look for the word Fino on the label, F-I-N-O, or a Manzanilla sherry, you really get this dry, nutty, elegant, and very light style wine.
That happens to go great, goes great with roasted nuts.
Nuts. If you're having sitting out on the deck with some almonds and some olives.
You know, when I was younger, I spent a lot of time in Spain, and in most of Spain, I found a lot of people who speak English, and I've learned to speak Spanish. But I was down. I visited Jerez de la Frontera, which is the village in the south of Spain, and also there's another one called Sanlúcar de Barrameda, which is another village in Spain.
Where the Manzanilla sherry is.
Yeah, delicious. And that's where they make this stuff. And so I'm a huge sherry fan. And when you're in Sanlúcar or in Jerez, you know, there aren't a lot of people that speak English. There's no,
right.
There's not a tourist attraction. It's just a working town. And the sherry production is amazing. And the nice thing about sherries for you at home, and you point this out in the book, is that sherries are already oxidized. And so when you can pour yourself a glass, put it in the refrigerator for a month, come back and pour yourself another glass.
Right.
Which is very, very convenient. But I'll tell you one experience I had. There was this little inn I used to stay at a town in Jersey called Lambertville. Beautiful little B&B. You know, it's three rooms, common living room. And they used to put out in the common room, they'd put out a decanter of sherry, which is nice, because if you put out wine in 3 days, it's turned bad.
That's right.
But they put out the sherry, it was great.
I just encourage people to try it. Again, look for the drier styles to start out with, the Finos and the Manzanillas, and sit down with a little thing of salted almonds and a little jamon or prosciutto out in a platter and some cheese and olives, and you will be in heaven.
See, for me, I say start with the sweeter styles. But in any event,
the sweeter?
I think
Amontillado or an Oloroso.
For starting out, even in you know, a cream sherry or an India Solera or something.
But I think that's why people are afraid of sherry. They think, oh, it's super sweet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just like they're afraid of drinking dry rosés because they think, oh, it's white Zinfandel and it's going to be so sweet.
Well,
if you're afraid of it, go look for those drier styles, just like you can have dry style Rieslings or dry style rosés.
And the other thing is, sherry is not very expensive. And when you look at a bottle of sherry, if you think your average glass of table wine, you drink 5, 5.5 ounces. Sherry, you drink 2.5, 3 ounces.
That's
There's
right.
a lot more servings in each bottle. But what I will tell you, I got to finish my story about the B&B out there. It was so gracious of them. They used to leave sherry out in a crystal decanter. Lovely. The only thing, don't put it on the radiator.
Okay.
That wasn't the best place to store it. It was like this kind of sherry sauce.
Boiled sherry. Yeah. A sherry reduction sauce.
It's durable. It's not that durable.
But the one last thing, and Francis alluded to this a minute ago about sherry, is, you know, I go to a lot of places and I order a wine by the glass. And frequently, I'm going to say all too frequently, I get a wine that's been open too long. Okay, and I don't love that when I go to a place and get a wine by the glass. But when you order a sherry by the glass, that's almost never a problem.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's just a sherry or Madeira. There are lots of very interesting things that you can try, that you can experiment with. So,
and I mentioned, just quickly, the Pedro Ximénez, the PX,
mm-hmm.
which if you want to try something, you know, if you're a port lover or, a rich dessert wine lover, man, a PX, a little glass of PX, is like drinking chocolate. It's
PX
so fabulous.
PX is a type of sherry. It's actually a different grape than most sherry is made of, and it's always sweet, and it's very, if you like sweet wine, it's very good. You can actually put it on ice cream. I want to point out one other thing about your book that I think is great, and this is the first one that I've seen do this. When we talk about vintages, and we're going to talk about vintages in a moment, we can recommend wines and wineries, especially the kind of wineries that we like, which are small family wineries that don't make a very manufactured product but make a very, you know, farm-based agricultural product. You know, there are good years and bad years, and there are mediocre years, and rather than recommend a specific vintage, especially in a book, which like Robert Parker's Wine Guide, you know, you have to get the new one every few years, you make these general suggestions within categories, all on an easy-to-understand graph, and for each of the wineries, this is the first wine guide I've seen like this, you include their website.
Yes, which was, mind you, not an easy task, because some of them I needed to go to the importer site or some. But you know what, that's how I find my wine information a lot of times. If I'm writing and I need to get information, I'll make sure that I go to the website and confirm what I've got. And I think that it's the best way right now, you know, for people to get info, to even buy the wines.
It is. And some of these websites are actually hard to find because they're not really good at marketing. So if you Google them, they may not come up anywhere near the top. And what you'll find is a bunch of stores that sell the wine, but you won't find the winery itself.
Exactly.
And so being able to go back to the source and find the winery itself, and then you can get an idea and you can look up the wines and see how the different vintages are. But it's a very useful book.
Well, thank you. And I wanted it that way. I really wanted it to just be able to open up, have all the 1,000 wines are in graph format, so again, you can scan quickly. But I also, when I make the list recommendations, I give you wine types. So if I'm talking about, hey, listen, are you having veggie pizza tonight? You know, look, believe it or not, you can have white wines with that and try a nice herbal Sauvignon Blanc. Try and I give you wine categories as well as specific picks so that if you can't find that exact wine, you can at least have a category that I think works well.
Let's talk for a minute about, and I think that this book is terrific, but your first book, we never had you on to talk about. It's called Wine for Women.
Shame on you guys.
I know. Well, we're doing it now. I'm making up for it now. So it's called Wine for Women. Why is wine for women different than wine for men?
You know what? I don't recommend. I tease. The cover of the book says Wine for Women, and I would put my fingers over the W and the O, and I'd say, see, guys, it's a wine book for men. And then people would say, no, come on, Leslie, what's your second book going to be, Wine for Men? And I said, no, men who wine.
How about
okay, drum roll.
Wine for Women and the Men Who Love Them?
And the Men Who Love Them. Mm. Wine for Men in Touch with Their Feminine
Side. What are the gender issues as they relate to drinking
wine?
It
has nothing to do with what you're drinking. I do not recommend different wines for men or women. There are more red wine chapters in the book than white wines. It really came about because I noticed over the course of my, 12 years as a wine educator and that the people would ask me very different questions. And I always thought that was interesting. You know, women tended to ask a little bit more of the lifestyle questions, possibly about the food, about the taste and style. And I actually do want to talk about the style profiles in both books because I find that's a really helpful way of thinking about wine and certainly one that is, I think, driven a lot by women in saying, I like a lighter style of, of dry whites. Mm-hmm. Or I like a full, richer, red style of wine. But those are the kind of questions I was getting asked, and I rarely, if ever, get asked by a woman, what did it score in the Wine Spectator or Robert Parker? You know, and that to me, and all the questions are valid. You know, there's never a dumb question about wine, ever.
Well, we watch a lot of football. We don't want to know the stats, you know.
Who won the wine game? Who got the 89? And so I just thought, there's a way of approaching this, as well as women, of course, being the majority of wine consumers in the country, buyers and drinkers.
Mm-hmm.
I thought there's a way to approach this from a perspective that I can include information that really seems relevant to women's daily lives. It's not that it's gender, exclusive. Guys can read it, learn a lot. Won the George DeBuff Best Wine Book of the Year award the year that it came out. But it's a fun read and people learn a lot. And I talk about wines by taste, by style. I talk about wines with food and I give a lot of recipes in the book from my own kitchen. And I talk about situations again. So very lifestyle driven book.
We're talking with Leslie Sprocco about her two books, Wine for Women and The Simple and Savvy Wine Guide.
Leslie, we need to go for a short break. But do you mind if when you come back, we talk about your television show?
I'd love to.
We'll be talking about Check Please, the PBS show with Leslie Sprocco in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Floors, walls, and lighting. The restaurant guys learned long ago that the key to making a space look great are floors, walls, and lighting. There's no tougher test to a carpet than a busy restaurant. From design to installation to cleaning, the Gillespie Group has handled the restaurant guys' restaurant floors for more than 10 years. Designers know what looks great on the first day. Bob Gillespie knows what will continue to look great year after year. Gillespie doesn't just install carpets. Their quality clean division has experience and expertise to keep that carpet looking great. In our business, it's the details that matter. In your home or office, the details make a lasting impression. The Gillespie Group handles projects from large hotels to offices right down to your living room. Look down. Go on, look down. Right there by your feet. You see. You need the Gillespie Group. Call them at 732-254-5508 or visit them at thegillespiegroup.com. Tell them the restaurant guys sent you and get a free cleaning with any installation. Remember, it's Gillespie for carpet and flooring, 732-254-5508.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. We've been talking all episode with Leslie Sprocco about her two wonderful books. The one is Wine for Women. The other is just coming out now, The Simple and Savvy Wine Guide, Buying, Pairing, and Sharing for All, which is an invaluable resource for buying many different wines in graphs and charts and with probably the best collection of winery websites I've seen in any book. So very, very valuable stuff. But Leslie also has a show on PBS called Check Please.
Leslie, last week we had a woman by the name of Alpana Singh who hosts a show called Check Please in the Chicago area for PBS. Now, that show has kind of drifted its way into the Bay Area as well, and that's a show you're now hosting. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the show?
It's a great, fun show. It actually, the concept did originate in Chicago at their PBS station, and Alpana is the host of the Chicago show. The concept is we get three regular people. You know, I've had a combination of a taxi driver, an attorney, and a stay-at-home mom on the same show. And
wait a second. You said regular people.
Regular folk. It can be anybody. We stay away from professional restaurant reviewers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they recommend their favorite restaurant or one of their favorite restaurants, and we anonymously send the other two out to go eat at those restaurants, and then they all kind of come back into the studio and report. And we sit around the table, and the set looks just almost like a restaurant. We sit around the table and we just talk about it, and it's very fun because you get a lot of agreement, but you also get a lot of disagreement.
What kinds of things do people disagree on?
Oh, you know, it's you get a lot of people don't like the service. They've had a bad experience with the service. You know, somebody loves this style of food, and another person thinks it's simple or too frou-frou. We recently had a show where I called the clam chowder controversy. We had somebody from New England and somebody from California, and the Californian thought this was the best clam chowder they've ever had.
Oh, boy.
And you get the New Englander saying, you call that clam chowder? Wallpaper paste. What are you, crazy? So, you know, it's very fun, and just people are very opinionated. And in the Bay Area, where Check Please Bay Area is shot here at our PBS station, people are extremely into food in San Francisco Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a lot of very, very articulate and very opinionated people, but that's what makes the shows exciting.
Well, you know, and I think it's fun to kind of get a look into how different people regard different types of restaurants. And that, you know, there are certain things that you technically can do correctly or incorrectly. But there are other things that are a matter of style and a matter of taste and a matter, and
exactly,
just like in your book, are a matter of mood that for depending on what type of restaurant you want to be in. And sometimes I think just to give a restaurant a score or a number of stars may not be giving you the whole picture.
Exactly. And again, you know, all the experiences that these people have are valid. I mean, somebody, you know, it's the hardest thing for me as the host is not to offer up my opinion,
mm-hmm,
even though I do eat at most all of the restaurants.
So you don't offer your opinion at all. You just moderate their discussion.
That's the really hard.
So I was going to say, I'm so darned opinionated, I could never do that.
You know, I'm grabbing my chair under the table half the time.
Don't
you know?
Sometimes want to say, what do you mean there was too much garlic,
yeah,
idiot?
You know, I just want to say, what are you, crazy?
This clam chowder stinks.
Hello?
Hello?
Do you people even know what ossobuco is?
You know, it's funny. I was thinking that we were going to ask the listeners to call in to our local PBS stations around here in New York and recommend that we be the guys.
Yes.
But we could never hold our tongues like that.
Oh, it's very hard, believe me. And my producer always looks at me when she says, we had to edit out that comment, you know.
You know what's funny? I'm remembering in the restaurant, and we had just opened Cafe Lombardi, which is an Italian-American restaurant. And, we always take what people have to say, people's criticisms, and we think about them and we put them in context. And, you know, some people just don't like the restaurant. You have to realize who your target market is. And I remember we opened Cafe Lombardi, this Italian-American restaurant based on the food of Mark's Italian-American grandmother, whose table I got to dine at in Brooklyn.
And which is a very different type of restaurant than our other restaurant, which is a very contemporary American, seasonal American restaurant.
So we're upstairs in one of the early evenings, and this woman calls me over, and she says, excuse me. I said, yes. She said, you know, there's garlic in everything. And I said, yes, ma'am. And she said, I think there's too much garlic. Everything is very garlicky. And I said, well, you know, thank you for your comments, and that's sort of what we're trying to do. And I was thinking, yeah, you're in the wrong restaurant.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, with that restaurant, one of the things that was very difficult for us in the beginning. With Stage Left, you know, we were doing something eclectic and something that was very new to a lot of different people.
So they accepted what we brought over.
With Catherine Lombardi, we're doing something that traditionally your grandmother made, and, you know, you had the battle with, were your grandmother's meatballs better than my grandmother's meatballs?
Right.
And so there were, for every five people that said there's too much garlic, there were five people that said there wasn't enough garlic.
Absolutely, of course. And actually, I've got my mother and my Italian mother-in-law's meatball recipe in this new book.
Sorry, we have to use Mark's grandmother's. I'm sorry.
My grandmother's meatballs were better than your grandmother's meatballs.
My mother-in-law's recipe's the best.
Well, Leslie, I hope next time you make it out to the East Coast, you stop by and have some of our meatballs and give us the final opinion.
I am going to take you up on that, guys.
Right, and
we're going to have a great bottle of wine with it.
I would love that. We're talking with Leslie Sobracco. Her new book is The Simple and Savvy Wine Guide, which you should pick up. You can find out how to do so on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Leslie, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much. It was great fun.
This was fun today.
She's been, what do you mean today? It's always fun. I'm always here. You always
yeah,
enjoy my...
That's the problem. Leslie was here today, so it was fun.
By the way, that's
usually
why...
I got to talk to you.
That's why we have guests, so that we don't have to talk to each other way too much. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some of our wine experiences and our wine guide experiences that are related to the book. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. We were interviewing Leslie Sobracco, author of the book that's just coming in now, The Simple and Savvy Wine Guide, which you can find on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. I think that one of the while there are a lot of great things in this book, for me as a wine professional, with all, you know, you've seen my desk, Mark. I've got a library. My bookcase is chock full of every wine publication you could possibly need, as well as bookmarked on my computer. Something that's very valuable to me is in this book, she has hundreds of wines listed with the website to the winery, which you would think would be easy to find by Googling, but isn't always easy to find.
Right. PaulHobbs.com is PaulHobbs.com, but not everybody is it as simple as that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and some of these wineries don't have websites, but she hooks you up to the website
right,
of
the
importer who has all the information you need.
It's something I think
I just want to say that as a consumer, when you go try to find that, mm-hmm. you'll find 1,000 listings for stores that sell the wine before you get to the store,
right.
the website that has the information on it, an invaluable guide.
Something I think that we forget sometimes that winemakers sometimes are basically farmers. Farmers who take the next step and take their grapes and make
right.
them into wine.
They don't have an IP person.
And sometimes
an IT person.
They don't have an IT person.
Yeah.
So you can't, you won't necessarily find this a glorious website on a winery that produces 600 cases
right, because the guy made it while he was riding his tractor on the laptop.
Exactly.
You know?
So, you know, another thing that Leslie talked about, she talked about wines to bring to parties and wines to bring to open that you can take your first foray into wine with, and that is Riesling. And I think that Riesling is really interesting to either bring to somebody's house or to age yourself. You know, there's a lot of different reasons for that.
Well, and the thing is, American Riesling can be good and simple, and there are some good American Rieslings. Stony Hill is my favorite American Riesling out of California. But German and Austrian Rieslings are great because they're very appealing, especially German Rieslings, because they have a little more sweetness to them. They're very appealing to somebody who doesn't know anything about wine, and the greatest German Rieslings are appealing to people who know a lot about wine, and they also are very age-worthy, and they don't cost a lot. The price-value relationship for German wines is really great. So
I think that's something, again, when you're talking about Riesling. You get the great aromatics from that somebody who's inexperienced will love, and you get the great layers of flavor that somebody who's really experienced will love.
And for specific recommendations, you can check out Leslie Sprocco's book. You can find it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Hope you've enjoyed the hour. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.